humanity now is dealing with the last superstition. You know what superstition? Anybody here superstitious?
No.
Okay, let me go over the definition. Superstition is a widely held but unjustified belief in supernatural causation leading to certain consequences of an action, event, or a practice based on such a belief. So, once again, are you superstitious?
No.
Okay, so here is what Deepak Chopra says. That is our last remaining superstition, and that is materialism. Materialism is the philosophical view that the only thing that can truly be said to exist is matter, that fundamentally all things that are composed of material are a phenomenon as a result of material interactions. So in other words, the reality that most people buy into is the belief that the external world is what is causation. That's what's making me feel the way I feel or be the way I am. And so in unity, that's not our context for how we understand how things are. And I'm wanting to talk a little bit about what we espouse as a unity philosophy. Because one of the things that's unique about unity is that we don't have a dogma. I mean, you haven't received yet, here are the things you must believe if you're going to be one of us. Anybody ever received that at a unity church? No. But yet at the same time, we do espouse that there is, even though we don't give you or tell you what to believe, we do espouse what the power of belief does in consciousness. That it's important for us to know that if we believe in something that's not the truth of us, then we manifest that belief nonetheless. And so part of what I'm beginning today is a series called, the series is based upon the five principles of unity, which helps us understand what we espouse and therefore what becomes the context for how we be in the effort to be in this world but not of it. And so today's talk is called There's Just God Going On. And I like that expression. When I was in ministerial school, I had an instructor who lived in that sense that there's just God going on. And if we have any other experience that says there's something else happening, we're not in alignment. We're not somehow connected to a dimension of ourself that is really capable of being presence unto our own life. And he would say things, his name was Dennis Nagel, he would say things not only that there was God going on, but he would say things like, God won't be late in 78. And then we would be waiting for God to come in 1978, of course. Then everything will be fine in 1979, and so on and so forth. But there's still this sense of always looking outside of ourselves for evidence of something greater than ourselves that's in charge of things. There's that sense of what we all yearn for, especially when we open ourselves to the questions like, what is life? What is God? What is this all about? Charles Fillmore's great-granddaughter, Connie Fillmore Bassey, was asked in 1990 to sum up what unity espouses. And so in a publication called The Keys to the Kingdom, she wrote an article called The Five Foundations of Unity. And so they've become known as the five principles of unity. And I'm wanting to do a series on each of these principles over the next five times that I speak, because I think it helps us have a greater sense of, especially in the context of us being a unity ministry, and just having a sense of value for the tradition that has enabled us to kind of amplify our capacity to make a difference in the world because of what we are about as a spiritual movement. Of course, this brings us into an understanding that there's a distinction between being a religion and a spiritual movement. And so we'll need to look at that just a little bit as well. But suffice to say that as we get into looking at what these five principles are, here is an easy way to kind of look at it. This is the YOU version of, in honor of the YOU, the version of the five principles. The first is God is, or there's just God going on. The second is I am, or if there's just God going on, we're creations of this great spirit. And this, the third principle is that I created, or we create our own personal reality through the thoughts that we think, the beliefs that we have, the behaviors that we put out there creates our own experience of life. And if we are interested in changing or transforming our life, we have spiritual practices. That's what I pray is all about. And then finally, if we want to have a better world, we have to be the change. And so these five principles help us kind of focus on the intentionality behind all the things that we bring together to help equip us in our spiritual unfolding, in our spiritual journey. So as we look at this first idea of God is, this whole idea of God being a power or a presence in our life, all of us have grown up with some concept of God. And I don't know about you, but my concept of God that was given to me by Catholicism didn't work for me. And I'm wondering how your concept of God that you grew up with, whether or not it has changed over the years. And indeed, when we look at religion in the context of what it espouses as being what we should aspire to in our humility to really accept our place in creation's order, that we have this sense that God is some supernatural being or some dimension of life that is above and beyond us. And of course, this kind of sense of God as being a supreme being is what Deepak Chopra was trying to point us to, is that we have superstitions about how our life is, and yet ignore some of the very certainties, some of the very basic principles that are inherent in all aspects of life. And so as we work to kind of, there's the other side of it. So we continually to evolve our God thought in the sense of really aligning with the times. And so, okay, now we have God on high, but now we have a connection, we have a device to kind of move us closer to that experience. But suffice to say, let us say that there is a place for where we have to understand the context of religion, especially in light of what we're discovering now through the blending of quantum science and spirituality. How many of you have heard of Bishop John Shelby Spong? Raise your hand. He's retired from the Episcopal Church, but he was one of the individuals who wanted to demystify the mythology around Jesus and Christianity in general. And basically, he believes that all religion is theistical? Theistically? Okay, so he says, I do not think of God theistically, that is, as a being supernatural in power who dwells beyond the limits of my world. I rather experience God as a source of life, willing me to live fully, the source of love, calling me to love wastefully, and borrow a phrase from the theologian Paul Tillich, as the ground of being, calling me to be all that I can be. So this is a very different concept of God. A God that's not in the context of holding us to some standard of being in order for us to feel loved or valued, but rather understanding that God is a dimension of ourselves that is seeking to live more fully through each one of us. And so a theistic view of God means that God is out there. And so it could be said that an atheistic view of God is God in here. A dimension of ourself knowing that part of who we are is this essence called God. Now, I'm not suggesting that we're atheists, as that might depict, but the connotation is such is that we do not invest our energy in the effects of life, in looking outside of ourselves for evidence of our well-being and worth. Because if we're God-made, and that's the second principle, if we're at our essence divine, then we're living separate and apart from that awareness, then our life is going to reflect that disconnect, that sense of separate self, or that sense of separation. And Jane and I, we both have academic doctoral degrees in theology, theos, anology, the study of God. The study of God in the context of our man-made image of what the higher power is supposed to be or supposed to do. And so consequently, in this context, we have created a kind of insurmountable gap between what God is in the context of religion and what we're sensing as the greater potential that we have to enter into a co-creative process with the entire universe as we get into the dimension of spiritual principles. And so it's easy for us to kind of look back our own spiritual upbringing to realize that it is as if, as this picture depicts, we've been given a sense of our limitations by virtue of being born into this world out of sin and iniquity, in the sense that we have been led to believe that we're less than by virtue of this institution called religion, which is all about a belief in a supernatural power. But when we get in touch with the truth of who we are and understand the universe in the context of science, then we begin to paint a bit different picture with respect to who we are and our relationship to this allness, this dimension of life that is the universe, that is God. And so our need is to both see that our God thought has evolved just as we are in an evolutionary process. So we're no longer worshiping the sun, but as a human family, there was a time when that was our reality. And we're no longer throwing people into the volcanoes. We've limited that. and so as we see the evolution of humanity, we see that our God thought has evolved. And now in this little cartoon, it shows that our God, what we worship now is material world. The things, the stuff of life that give us a sense of value and meaning, but what we're trying to move into is a greater understanding that this sense of what God is, this dimension of this that we have in our more religious upbringing called the Almighty, is really a mirror unto the dimension of who we are as spiritual beings. And until we come into an understanding that that's the truth of who we are, we live hoping for something outside of ourselves to be to find its way into our life. And instead of taking charge of our life and deciding how we're going to be with what's happening in our life. So part of the challenge with our coming to terms with God as the principle of being, the ground of our being, is that in our human experience, we have all kinds of things happen in our life that cause us to question whether or not there is an intelligence out there that has our back, cause us to wonder about whether or not the world is a safe place. And all of the experience that we have live in the context of our growing evolutionary process of learning more and more about our sense of connection and oneness with all of life. And so if we begin in the journey feeling separate and apart, then it's no wonder we have a God that is responsible for our lives. But as we grow and mature in our sense of understanding the interconnection, the web of life, when we recognize that we're not separate or apart from anything, then we begin to understand that there is no power out there that has as its intent to try to oppress us in any fashion, but the power is within us, and we have to unleash that power. We have to recognize who we are as spiritual beings, as part of the dimension that God is. We are a part of that. As a matter of fact, as we affirm every Sunday, as we come together, when we use our opening affirmation, there's only one presence and one power active and at work in my life and in the universe, God the good. But the reality is that we say that, but somehow deep down inside, oops, let me go back, this missed this part. Then there are the exceptions, right? So in other words, we in our effort to come together, we espouse that there's one presence and one power active and at work in our life, but then we live as if there are exceptions to that. Can you see how that's part of the conundrum that we have? That when we're faced with trying to reconcile the principle that there's just God going on, when the reality that we live in appears as if that's not the case. It appears as if that there are other forces at work in our life. And indeed, there is in the relative a distinction between that which is happening from the absolute. In the absolute, there is one presence and one power active and at work in our lives. But when we reduce ourselves and feel a sense of separation from that one presence and one power, then we live in a dimension of life where we can experience duality. We can experience polarity. We can experience things that separate themselves in terms of right or wrong, good or bad. And so in this dimension of the world in which we are occupying, where our consciousness lives in the disconnect, believing that we're separate and apart, those experiences can find their way into our life. But when we reconnect ourselves into the awareness of our oneness with God and our oneness with all life, when we reconnect to that part of ourself that intuitively is already connected to the awareness that we're one with all of life, everybody, everyone, everything, everywhere, and every time, we are connected to all of that. And when we bring our awareness to that connection and feel ourselves expand into that awareness that we are a part of the whole, that there's nothing about us that separates us from that other than our BS, our belief system. And so if we are aware that, yes, there is this sense that there's one presence and one power, that means that my life is for me, but my experience, my conditioning has me believing me as separate and apart, then if we can feel that struggle, then we're really close to being able to break through to the other side and begin to activate and actualize the dimensions of ourself that is already latent, ready to kind of fill in all the gaps in our sense of separation. But we have to kind of focus on our own exceptions. We have to stop looking out there and saying, look what's going on in politics and in the world. And all those places, our mind is going to be drawn into the belief that what's out there is the most real. And we have to bring our attention back to where we are separate and apart. Let that other stuff go and focus on where am I in my relationship to what I'm having, either pushing this experience away or making this experience against me or having this experience cause me to touch into my sense of not enough, my sense of inadequacy, my sense of disappointment, my sense that I'm not where I'm supposed to be. And so as we understand that we can have all those feelings with what's happening in our life, but if we recognize that the reality is that our life is for us, regardless of how it looks or feels or what we've made the situation mean, then our spiritual practice has to be to use what we have as if it's our abundance. And so what if what we have doesn't feel like it's our abundance? Well, that's the nature of the struggle. We have to override what the situation is causing us to become or feel and recognize that what we become or what we feel is a conditioned response to believing that we're separate and apart. But if we recondition our awareness to recognize, no, I'm connected to a greater whole, and I can draw upon that greater whole by allowing myself to release that which is what I'm making against me. And instead, I can't necessarily have the evidence that this is for me, but if I know the principle that there's just God going on, I can know that this is for me on the level of principle and at my heart, and then I can be in the felt sense of gratitude for that which is making its way into my life. So, our effort to kind of reconcile our human experience with the reality that we're living in a universe that is God-made, and if it's God-made, it has to be for us, and if we're experiencing something other than that, it's because we are out of alignment with that. We're out of phase with the field of infinite possibilities. And what separates us is nothing out there but our own sense of connection, our own sense of who we are. And so as we move into a kind of appreciation for the principles that we espouse in unity, we can feel a sense of empowerment over knowing our oneness with all of life. We're a part of all of life. And we can settle into the awareness that if God is for us, then nothing can be against us. And so it's up to us to then apply spiritual practice to the issues. How is it possible I'm making what I have unto me not enough? And if we're not in that kind of inquiry with respect to how we're showing up with what we're having in life, we're going to be frustrated and trying to change what's going on instead of really looking at and owning how we're being with our life, as opposed to how our life is being with us. And so finally, just to kind of give you something to chew on later on, take these questions into consideration. How has your concept of God evolved over the years? And it's important to kind of see. You know, I was raised in the Catholic Church, and I got to tell you, I just never believed it. I just never believed it. And so consequently, I grew up with no belief in heaven or hell, because I never believed it. But that's what I was trained to believe. They tried to get me to believe that. But I know many people who have struggled in their journey through their spiritual upbringing. And many of us have been wounded and bullied and abused in our spiritual upbringing. I know my son's husband has been. I mentioned about his anti-gay therapy that he has experienced in his church. What is one area of your life that feels as if it's an exception to the principle that there's just God going on? So it's very typical that we have areas in our life where we act as if there's no God here. And look at who you have the matter with you. That's one place. Where you're in the way of God. You know, you're either the way of God or in the way of God. And it's important for us to see that. We're in the way of God whenever we're judging somebody. We're in the way of God whenever we need to be right. We're in the way of God whenever we have to have things be a certain way. We're in the way of God because God says, I can't work with you. Yeah. So how would your life be different if you always lived in the integrity with the principle that it's all God, it's all good? So think about that. How would your life be different if there was no longer the dimension of ourself that could look out there and say, oh, that means I'm not good enough. Oh, that means that I can't afford this. Or that means that that's out of my reach. And so until we get to a place where we can really own that, once we can sort of see, yes, look how my life would be different, then the intent is to be in integrity with taking ownership of your life. So next Sunday I'm doing the talk, and the talk title is, You Are the One. You're the one. You're the one. You're the one unto your own life. God bless you. See you next time.
Thank you very much, Dr. Gary. That was very well. Very well.
I wing it.
No, you didn't wing it. I know you didn't wing it. I don't know how he does it without how he does it without notes, I'll never know. Okay, but thank you. It was wonderful. Unity stands for peace in the presence of conflict, for love in the presence of hatred, for forgiveness in the presence of injury. Unity honors the many names for God, the many paths to God, for we know, As Gary told us, there is only one power, one presence, one life. So whoever you are, and wherever you are on your journey of transformation, know that you are welcome here. We would especially like to welcome anyone who is here for the first time. If this is your first time visiting with us and you feel comfortable raising your hand, our ushers have a gift packet for you. Is there anyone here for the first time today? Oh, lovely. Thank you. It's nice to have you here. On the outside of that packet, there's a form you can fill out to be added to our mailing list for our weekly e-news update and our quarterly newsletter. If you're interested, please fill it out and drop it in the love offering bag as it comes around today instead of giving a donation. Also, after the service, you can take the packet to the barista stand and get a beverage of your choice. Then you can take it to our bookstore and get a